The following presentation is a production of Our History Project, which can be found at www.ourhistoryproject.com and on iTunes under Our History Project and OHP Radio On Air. This show is sponsored by the Sons of Confederate Veterans, an organization which encourages you to look into the past and honor your Southern ancestors in spirit and stories for the trials and tribulations they encountered and those who had the courage and determination to stand for what they believed. The Sons of Confederate Veterans also invites you, regardless of your heritage, to take a look back at your family, learn about them, get to know them, and remember and honor them. For more information on the Sons of Confederate Veterans, go to 1-800-MY-SOUTH. Again, that's 1-800-MY-SOUTH.com or call them at 1-800-MY-SOUTH. Hello everyone and welcome to Our History Project. Thank you for joining us. We have a treat for you this week because we are going to delve into the women of our past. Now remember, here on Our History Project, we not only talk about history, but we talk about herstory. And again, we have heroes and we have sheroes, and we're going to delve into that just a little bit this week. But before I get started, let me remind you that it's not going to be too much longer. We got until January 1st for you to go over to Our History Projects. Click on the email link to be added to our email each week. Our newsletter is going out. And what does that get you? It gets you a chance to enter for our contest that's going to be held on January 1st. This is going to be either a 2.5-hour Segway tour of Gettysburg Battlefield by Bob Velke and Seg Tours, or an 1843 original cavalry saber by John Walsh and Fort Donelson Relics. And all you have to do is go to Our History Project and sign up for our monthly newsletter. Actually, it's a weekly newsletter, so you're going to get 2 a week. But no more than that, promise you, and we won't sell your name to anybody. Okay, our guest this week is Miss Donna McAleer. Donna, how are you?
I'm great, Craig. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it is a pleasure. It is a pleasure. Now, Donna and I met at the Military Writers Society of America conference up there in Pittsburgh, and we got to talking, and she does have a book out, and that's what we brought her on today to talk about, and it's called Porcelain on Steel. Now, Donna, let me start by giving you a small introduction, because I pulled your bio, but it's going to take me about 20 minutes to read all of it if I have to. So let me give you a synopsis of Miss Donna, and then I'm going to let you take it from there and introduce yourself properly to our audience. Miss Donna is a West Point graduate. She's a 2002 Winter Olympian. She's the executive director of a nonprofit called People's Health Clinic. Now, Donna, like I said, you have a wide repertoire of things that you have accomplished in your career, but give us a feeling of who you are.
Well, thanks, Craig. I've been studying and practicing leadership for more than 20 years as a West Point graduate, an Army officer, a business leader, a nonprofit executive director, and an aspiring Olympian and now writer. I've had a very diverse career that started at West Point and in the military, where I really developed my leadership potential. There's no institution or organization that provides the opportunities that the military does at a very young age in terms of leadership, teamwork, responsibility, and accountability. And I served as an officer for a couple of years in the late 80s and early 90s. And then I decided I wanted to pursue a career in business and earned an MBA from the Darden School at University of Virginia. And from there, was in management consulting for a while, and then operations and logistics, where I worked at a technology company running their worldwide logistics program. And then in 2000, I got the Olympic bug. I had always had a dream as a child of being an Olympian. I had been a diver and a skier and played a lot of different sports. But women's bobsled was announced that it was making its Olympic debut, and it was an incredible mix of science, technology, and athleticism of hurling yourself down an ice culvert at 70 miles an hour. So I pursued that dream with fervor, having designed my position as a corporate vice president to pursue that Olympic dream, and it was an incredible journey. I finished fourth in the Olympic trials. The top two teams made it, and the number two team won a gold medal. So it was a really exciting time to be part of that. And coming off of that, I really wanted to give back to a community that had supported me on that journey, and I became the executive director of a nonprofit organization called the People's Health Clinic, which is committed to providing quality and medical care for the uninsured in the community in which I live in, which is Park City, Utah. I was also coaching girls volleyball, and it was during my experience of coaching the young women at Park City High that the concept for Porcelain on Steel, Women of West Point's Long Gray Line, my book, was born.
Okay, good. Now, before we get too far into this, now, Donna, I had a chance to look at your website, Porcelain on Steel, and I looked completely over everything, and I went to the accolades section, and I read all of what was going on there, who had what to say about the book. But I must say, I picked one out because I think it draws more correlation, and it was by General Joseph Franklin, and it says, "Good steel comes from hot fire. The porcelain and steel, Donna McAleer, has gathered stories of impressive array of women who have graduated from West Point and served as leaders of our nation's army. All the women in this collection have combined West Point's creed of duty, honor, country, with their personal attributes of courage, perseverance, and vision to achieve a great success in their service to our country in the uniform and beyond." You know, and it goes on, and but if you get a chance to look at this, folks, go over to her website, porcelainonsteel.com, and take a look at this. And Donna, the reason I picked this one was because General Franklin was actually there during the graduating class of 1980. He was there during some of the trials and tribulations. But before we get into that, most people don't understand how big a deal it is to get into West Point. Can you give us a background and a brief synopsis on what it takes to be a candidate at West Point?
Sure. West Point is really looking for those young men and women with high leadership potential and a desire to serve our nation as a leader of character, as an officer in the United States Army. Forbes and Fortune magazines both ranked West Point as the top college in the country. It is a very long admissions process, and really West Point, along with the United States Naval Academy, Air Force Academy, Coast Guard, and Merchant Marine, the five Federal Service Academies, are really looking for very well-rounded students. So the components of that are strong academics, a high school background that is strong in math, science, history, language, English, all the building blocks of higher education. The second aspect is leadership potential. Involvement as well as leading student organizations, be it the newspaper, be it the yearbook, student government, scouting, girls' state, boys' state. And then the third piece is the physical aspect, the physical fitness and the athletics. Those three components, West Point and the other service academies, puts into their admissions algorithm in determining those who have that potential to succeed through a very rigorous curriculum. And as General Franklin described, it really is a crucible. And, you know, if we look at a crucible has really, really hot fire. And that hot fire and pressure help to produce strong leaders of character who act and live honorably, who are critical thinkers, who lead with compassion and character. So yes, it's a extreme challenge and honor to go to the Federal Service Academies. And you know, some people say, well, you know, these academies, you know, you get a full scholarship. Well, I think it's important to know, while cadets are on scholarship, it's certainly not a free education. While West Point cadets, cadets of West Point graduate with no financial debt, calling the education free is not accurate.
Absolutely.
All Military Academy graduates of all the Federal Service Academies paid for their education by risking their lives in service to our country. A significant number of our graduates, young and old, have made the ultimate sacrifice in defending our freedom and that of other nations. And I think it's important to remember, as a nation at war, Americans have continued opportunity to reflect on West Point has given our nation and our world in return for that free education.
Fantastic. And also, you don't just apply to there. You have to be appointed.
You do have to be appointed. You have to be nominated.
Right.
And what the nomination is there are various sources, but they come from congresspeople, senators, the vice president, or the president. And everybody can apply to different sources. And what that appointment is, when you're nominated and you receive an appointment from West Point, that's really the legal authority to attend the academy, since it is a federally funded institution. So it's a lengthy process. And the reason for the length and the intensity of the process is really to determine who really is up to this challenge. You know, the best advice is for students in high school to start thinking about this when they're a sophomore and begin the application, open a candidate file at the beginning of their junior year, and to take courses in high school that are going to prepare them, taking 4 years of math, taking 4 years of history, taking 4 years of language, and not just taking courses that are maybe less rigorous academically. But West Point is a curriculum based in science and engineering. It's really a true liberal arts education, and a liberal arts education is one that exposes students to a wide variety of disciplines and helps them think critically to make decisions.
Right, right. And also, as we're getting into this, now I don't know what the figure is right now, and forgive us, folks, we are going somewhere with this, but the attrition rate used to be, years ago, somewhere in the neighborhood of 35 or 40% of cadets that came in did not graduate. Do you know what
that
it is?
That has changed significantly.
Has it? Okay.
The attrition rate is much lower now, and West Point continues to refine its admissions algorithm. That, you know, the attrition rates are probably somewhere below 20% now. If you are admitted, there's a pretty high correlation shown through a lot of regression analysis that if you have the desire and determination and the will to succeed, you can. West Point, while it's a very challenging environment, it's also a very supportive environment. The staff and faculty, the professors are available all the time. It's a hard place to not get help if you're willing to ask for it.
Great, great. Now that brings us to your book, and it's called Porcelain Steel, The Women of West Point's Long Gray Line. And you were a graduate there. You were not in the first class of women who graduated from West Point, but you weren't far behind. And I'm not saying that to make you feel old. But, you know.
Well, I think anybody out more than a decade is considered an old grad there. So.
Is that what it is? But, you know, there had to be some trials and tribulations that you went through, and I do want to get into that. But also, let me start here. Number one, the name Porcelain on Steel is a great title. I love it. What was the thought process behind that title?
Porcelain on Steel was inspired by meeting a sculptor, artist, and filmmaker, Tara Krause, who's actually an 82 graduate, and viewing her artwork created for fallen warrior sisters. She had created sculptures for academy graduates of all the service academies that had been killed in the global war on terror. And at the time I met her, there were five. And there were these phenomenal statues called Women Soar, Porcelain on Steel. And I loved the alchemy of the two materials, Porcelain is a strong, vitreous, translucent ceramic material often used in the making of fine china. And as you know, steel is a hard, durable, strong, and adaptable alloy of carbon and iron. And it's widely used as a structural material in buildings, in plowshares, and swords. And the mix of the two materials, as materials and as words, as an adjective, steel is suggestive of character qualities such as hard and unflinching, porcelain being fine, delicate, smooth. And the two materials, to me, really honor the beauty and underlying strength of West Point women.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. Now, Donna, I'm gonna come at you from a slightly different angle with the rest of the interview, and only because I am a father of two daughters. I don't have any sons in the whole mix, and in dealing with that aspect, I have been actively seeking for years now things that will, or people that will bring them up, letting them know that they can do whatever they set their mind to do. In our household, Tamara Pierce, Ellie Meyer, Kristen Britton are all huge authors because they have such strong women characters in it. And I think Tamara Pierce is the one who coined the term sheroes. And I was glad to see your book come out because it's showing a real-life perspective on the sheroes of history. And what made you look into or write this book? What gave you the conception of, say, this is something I want to do?
Well, Porcelain on Steel was really born out of my experiences as a high school volleyball coach. I was very concerned with several of the celebrity role models my young athletes admired. And what I learned was, you know, what I realized is as Americans, we are just bombarded with images of women selling everything from beer to cars. And I think sometimes young women have trouble getting past all these images that the media throws at us, that kind of sex and looks are the Rosetta Stone of power and esteem and confidence and success. And I looked back, you know, fondly and with pride at many of the women whom I attended West Point with and served within the Army. And these women exhibited to me courage and strength, perseverance, resilience, and character during numerous and repeated stressful and challenging situations. And I just felt they could really serve as sterling role models. And I felt my team could learn. If they could learn about some of these women, perhaps they would consider pursuing different paths, different careers, and think about all the different things they could do. And that was really the genesis of the book. And you alluded to, well, not you didn't allude to, you said specifically, I mean, the role fathers play in the growth and development of their daughters is so critical in terms of value and impact and confidence. Yes, mothers are known more as the nurturing type and the ones who are always going to bolster those little girls, but for fathers to be, you know, continuing to emphasize that really anything is possible, and if you know your limits, well, then just ignore them. It's a good starting point in the ground.
Right, right, absolutely. And I have been one personally over the years who have gone with my wife for her to pick out something at a store or a car dealership or whatever, and have the salesman look past her to talk to me when she's the one making the decision and has the money. So I usually just walk away on that. So
right, and the other thing is, you know what? You can be beautiful with brawn and be a leader. I mean, all the women in Porcelain on Steel and at West Point and serving particularly in our military, they're it's real life, they're real leaders, they're real women, and they're people who live next door to you and me. They're not celebrity role models. And I think it's interesting, you know, as we look towards all the different impressions we receive every day from numerous media sources, We know celebrity role models. We know icons. We know history makers, you know, star athletes and celebrities. But we know a lot less about those who serve our nation. And one of my goals in writing this was to change that. I think it's important that we recognize achievements of women, you know, really in all facets of life, be it in community, government, art, sports, literature, medicine, military, science. It has an enormous impact on the development of self-respect and opportunities for girls and women.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself. Now, when we're talking about porcelain on steel, now you highlight and do a portrait, if you will, 14 different women and West Point graduates. And like I said before, you are one of them. So before we get to them, give me an insight to what it was to be female and a cadet there at the academy during your tenure.
It's a challenge for anybody, regardless of gender. I think the biggest thing being a woman is your gender is not something you can change. Your gender and your skin color are not something you can change. So regardless of the ribbing or the hazing for those two things, you can never change those. So what you learn is how important performance is. Performance in the classroom, performance in the athletic field, competence in your military skills. And West Point is really the great equalizer there. The standards are almost the same. One of my challenges is I think if we were to institute standards-based policies, particularly in the physical arena, there would be much less differentiation between men and women. And I think this is a huge issue for the military as well. Once you develop different standards, even though they're based on physiological differences of men and women, that differentiation immediately separates people into groups based on their gender. And I think for so many of us, and particularly for the early women on that vanguard of a new generation of leaders, we didn't like being called women cadets or female cadets. As today, I mean, we want to be called cadets, but until you have those equal-based standards, I think that's a challenge.
Right, right. And I guess you're going over thousands of years, per se, of, how can you put this, a stereotyping, I guess would be the best word for it, what the male thinks is women are, you know, of the female's gender. You know, this is what we have in our mind. We don't want you in a situation like that because of your frailty. And, you know, you got to look at most of through history, you have some great women warriors. You have some great women leaders. And you have to consider, you know, just like I always tell my girls, I said, whoever said the sugar and spice little rhyme did not have girls. So,
well, right. I mean, go back to Joan of Arc. Women, as well as men, have a stake in our republic. And there are women, just like men, who want an education from a top institution, who want to develop their leadership potential, who want to serve in the military and be part of the profession of arms and something greater than themselves. The reasons for serving are the same.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, Don, I'm going to put you on the spot. Now, give me one, if looking back at your West Point life there, what was the one, if you only had to pick one, what was the greatest thing that came out of that for you personally?
The confidence that I really could do anything I set my mind to. What West Point does is put you in numerous situations that you have to bring together disparate pieces of information. You have to build a team to achieve an objective. And I think that's what West Point really teaches, is critical thinking and leading confidently. And you do it, you lead others as well as you lead yourself, and you have to set the example. So it is hard to pinpoint one thing, but I think it would be, well, it's going to be three. It's going to be confidence, character, and compassion. I think they're all rolled up into leadership.
Fantastic, fantastic. Because I know it was a loaded question. I'm sorry to hit you with it, but it was a curiosity that I just had to know. So now, I don't want to dwell on the negatives too long, because I want to get into all the positives and hear some of these great stories that you've brought forth in these books. But, you know, up until 1976, you know, and West Point was the first academy to allow women in. And, you know, we in the 90s, we had the VMI debacle, to where it was a huge mm-hmm. court case. It was all over the news. You know, you think about the... Even during segregation, the first blacks who crossed that line, you know, what courage that they had. And you have to wonder, you know, from us looking in, we see very small bits and pieces of what goes on and the trials that they went through. But as you have researched this book and you've gotten to know these first series of women who was there, Can you give us some insight on what they went through? I know I pulled a 1980 Time magazine article out and read some of that, and it was, okay. You know, it was one of those, wow.
Well, I think that there are a couple things. Interestingly enough, the Merchant Marine Academy was the first to admit women, and women were actually admitted there in 74.
Oh,
and
good.
It was by executive order of then President Gerald Ford in 75 that the remaining four Federal Service Academies were ordered to open to women in 76. So the women who entered in 76, you know, entered through the stone gates that previously had been omnibus fair, all men, for, you know, nearly 175 years. So they face an institution with deep, deep history and tradition. And I think leaders of probably the women's and civil rights movement are not likely to mention West Point as the archetype for advancement on their behalf, but, and they probably wouldn't point to the Army either as a model of progress and opportunity, but both West Point and the Army have been microcosms where I think small battles and victories have led to fundamental social change, be it, you know, the acceptance in 1983 when Henry O. Flipper, the first African American to graduate from West Point, joined. The women, West Point has broken the racial barriers, the ethnic barriers, and the gender barriers, but the 119 women that entered in 76, of those 119, 62 graduated 4 years later. And they faced two types of challenges. I mean, one, obviously, based on their gender and performance, the challenges were the gamut, from daily kind of insidious, spiteful comments to more serious incidences of instances within the barracks and rooms being, you know, disheveled for inspection, being called, you know, every name, every pejorative name in the book on a repeated basis. And I think what these women demonstrated was just this incredible resilience and persistence in succeeding in that environment. And one of my close friends tells the story of being in a classroom, and it really all comes down to leadership. And she was the only woman in that particular class. She responded to a question of which one of her male classmates completely discredited her just because of her gender. And she said it was the professor and the leadership of the professor in the class who made it very clear that that was completely unacceptable. And she said that's when, you know, things started to change, is when leaders take action. So I think, you know, you really have to talk to the women of that class. They entered for the same reasons all the men did and earned their spots there. They just, you know, any organization going through a major fundamental change it's going to have its bumps in the road. I think the amazing thing is now we look forward with 30 years of women graduating West Point. You talk to women who graduate today, and it's no longer an issue of being a woman and being an officer. They're cadets and they're officers. And I think those are great strides that have been made.
Right. And you know, in reading this article from Time Magazine from the 1980s, you know, one of the things, and I don't know, Donna, I don't know why this stuck out to me because it is a very minor detail, but one of the gripes from one of the cadets there was talking about their uniforms and how they didn't have tails, they didn't have pockets, and all their material, all their possessions had to go inside of their hat. And the reporter was talking about watching them on a daily basis. Every time they would remove their hat, all their stuff would fall out. And you know, it was thinking, you know, that's got to be monotonous. But you know, it's something, it's such a small detail, but that's just one thing that you had to deal with every day.
Well, the uniform issue was actually very significant in that first class. So one of the iconic uniforms that I think our public is pretty familiar with are the dress gray. It's the parade uniform of cadets, and it's a short coat with tails. The first class of women, when they were issued those uniforms were designed without tails. And the original thought behind that was they felt that the tails would make the women stick out more because of the physiological structure of hips and a rear end. Well, what ended up happening is the fact that they didn't have tails made them stand out even more. And again, it was one of those distinctions that the logic made sense, but the implementation of it did not. And the next year, all those uniforms were abolished. So there's only a handful of those uniforms out there. But, you know, now the uniforms now are similar in nature. Obviously, some of the cuts are different. But again, those are the distinctions that help to create a disparity when you're trying to really create integration. So again, I mean, those first years, from the time the executive order came down in October and the arrival of the women in July 76, I mean, we had a really short time here. It was 8 months. And so there was an intense amount of preparation on the academy's part to open the doors to women. And so, you know, from the uniforms to the structure of the barracks to all kinds of facilities, you know, the academy actually did a pretty phenomenal job in getting ready. Was it perfect? By no means. And I think each year things improved. I think what's significant is this year, the 30th anniversary of women graduating West Point, history was made once again, and President Barack Obama, who delivered the commencement address, acknowledged the top two cadets, graduating cadets, the number one cadet overall and the number one cadet academically, were both women, and they were both recipients of the prestigious Rhodes Scholarships.
Wow. That's great.
You know, and I think, again, you know, despite these detailed integration plans that were put together in the 8 months, the first women, you know, not only faced challenges any pioneer faces, but this frequent harassment from many of the cadets and the faculty who saw their entrance into West Point as an affront to one of the really few remaining bastions of malehood. I think, you know, you asked again about those first women. I mean, one of the most popular comments I heard from the women I interviewed was, at West Point, you always greet upper-class cadets. And when the women would greet upper-class male cadets, you know, typically they would say, "Good morning, sir," and the typical retort was, "It was a good morning until you bitches got here." And it was a reminder each day that they weren't welcome. And, you know, another one of those comments was that, "I'm going to do everything in my power to run you out of here and make sure that you and your classmates do not graduate. And the your classmates was always just referring to women, segregating them as they, you know, just based on their gender.
Right. Wow.
Some women had their doors flung open and bombarded with shaving cream-filled condoms. Some recalled having, you know, cadet sabers thrust through their bed sheets and pillows or left impaled in their mattresses. I mean, there were numerous incidents in that first year that I will tell you, by the time I entered, that did not exist. There's still somewhat of an attitude, and I think there will always be a attitude from people who are different from you. That's human nature. But again, everything comes down to performance. And will you be there to support your colleague and your teammate? And, you know, how will you act in the battlefield, on the battlefield with them?
Right. And just think, folks, just like when we did the show on the 2nd Ranger Division, the all-black Ranger Division in Korea, just like we're talking here. You know, we volunteered to be here. We wanted to go. We wanted to serve. We wanted to help. And to put it in a mindset like that, and then to go back and find all this, the harassment, you know, I guess what it does, it tells how faithful that these women are and how much, Donna, that you're willing to endure for your dream. I mean, you know, the courage that it took only to be there, and even now, is like you said, I'm sure things are better, but I'm sure they're not perfect. And so my hat's off to you, ladies.
Well, thank you. And I think I think you would find that most women there have a little bit of a Nietzschean philosophy, is that of which that does not kill you makes you stronger. And it made all of us stronger, overcoming a lot of those obstacles and pushing us. And every cadet is pushed to their limits, you know, physically, mentally, spiritually, academic, and emotionally. So again, when you asked about, you know, what did you take from West Point, it's the confidence to lead and the confidence to do anything you set your mind to.
Great. Now, on the book itself, when you got into these portraits that you were painting of these women, how did you go about doing the process? Did you do interviews? Did you do phone interviews? Were some of these close friends of yours? I mean, what was the process of going through doing the book?
Well, it was a little bit of everything, Craig. At the time I started, there were 2,500 women who had graduated. And what I really wanted to do was capture the broad backgrounds, the broad and diverse backgrounds of women who come to West Point from all walks of life and socioeconomic backgrounds, athletes, geeks, blacks, whites, Hispanics, Asians, straight, lesbians, those from military families, those from not military families, and the spectrum of why women wanted to come to the military academy. So there were specific stories I sought out, and the others, I actually put out a query to our West Point Women's Network and shared what I wanted to do and the goals of the project and asked people to share their stories. And so from that process, actually there were a few hundred responses, kind of culling it down through the interview process. It was a lengthy interview process, and one that required, you know, a level of intimacy, of sharing some pretty personal things. Some women just, you know, I think the important thing is, Craig, as you know, every soldier has a story, and every woman who's gone to West Point has a story. And the challenge was, you know, picking out a group that represented this broad spectrum of backgrounds as well as experiences at West Point, in the Army, and post-Army. And the group selected for this anthology spans the range of classes that graduated, and it contains a mother and daughter. It reflects a spectrum of post-West Point life history. And again, their experiences are as diverse as the women themselves.
Right. Now, the next question I have for you on that same line is the women that we have talked to, and we've done quite a number here on our history project, in talking about their experiences. You know, there has been a lot of things set up for the guys who was in combat, who had issues, who wanted to vent, wanted to talk. But as we have learned, there almost is nothing for the women. And, you know, it could be 20, 40, 60 years later before anything ever comes out, you know, and it's all bottled in. What is your organization, especially there at West Point and the women's group there, able to do for not only the cadets coming in, but for the support of the ones who have been in combat or non-combat or just having issues related to life?
Well, I think the biggest thing is we can offer support and direction of organizations that deal directly with specific issues. One is post-traumatic stress syndrome. I mean, we're just now seeing the effects on the numbers of soldiers serving in combat with post-traumatic stress syndrome. And, you know, I think you met at the conference Jerry Yellen, who was a World War II fighter pilot. And, you know, for 50 years, he bottled up everything that had happened. And there was, you know, there were no outlets. And he now has begun a phenomenal program that offers work in transcendental meditation to help soldiers overcome this. So I think what you see from the West Point Women's Network is a supportive group that helps link people with various resources to help them tactically address some of these challenges. I think the other important thing that the West Point Women's Network offers is mentoring. We now have this, you know, essentially database of 30 years of experience of women attending and graduating and achieving all levels in the military. And I think for cadets, you know, they now have those role models of women that they can reach out to and vice versa to, you know, get different pieces of data, be it about maybe pursuing a certain career field, and then make decisions based on some of that input. You know, that didn't exist in the first couple of years there.
Fantastic, fantastic. Now, Donna, let's get into some of the stories of the book. It's something that I have not been able to put my hands on as of yet, but I'm going to. And so I brought you on, so I'm a little blindsided on what these stories entail. But as you said, everybody has a story. And since you have put forth time and effort into this book, it's got all this praise. What kind of stories can you give me? And I don't want to give away the whole book, but can you give me a couple?
Well, I'll share, if I can, I'll share three.
Okay.
The first is a story about Captain Dawn Halfacker. Dawn is class of 01, and she grew up in Rancho Bernardo, California, and she was a phenomenal basketball player and had dreams of playing Division I basketball and maybe perhaps playing one day in the WNBA. And after speaking with one of the basketball coaches, Dawn realized that West Point was not just a college but a future, and she really liked what she saw. She entered West Point. She was a stellar, outstanding basketball player, and she graduated 4 years later and selected going into the military police corps. Shortly after Dawn graduated in May 01, the attacks of September 11th happened a few months later. And as the leader of a military police platoon deployed to Iraq, Lieutenant Halfacker and her soldiers were assigned to train an Iraqi police battalion in the heart of a pretty volatile and ethnically mixed Bakuba neighborhood. And while leading a reconnaissance patrol on a sweltering moonless night, dressed in full combat gear and in her Humvee with three other soldiers, well, four soldiers, a driver, a gunner, her platoon sergeant, and an interpreter, they were ambushed, and as the driver turned the corner, small arms fire rained down on them from all directions and completely illuminated their position, and a rocket-propelled grenade pierced through the engine compartment of the Humvee she was riding in the back seat. It came through the engine compartment. It took off the lower left arm of her platoon sergeant, who was sitting in the front seat, and it tore through the seat and into her right shoulder and arm and exploded behind her head. And dazed and confused, she shouted, "Get out of the kill zone." And all of a sudden, her future was not here, and it was not the one she imagined. Dawn ended up losing her right arm. And after several months of rehabilitation and a new prosthetic device, she questioned her ability to continue to serve her country, now medically discharged from the Army. Yet, she found another way to secure and protect the peace. She founded Halfacker & Associates, a growing multi-million-dollar company with more than 30 employees dedicated to providing national and homeland security services. And I think Dawn is just an incredible example of somebody who would do it all again and has continued to serve selflessly. She was no longer able to serve in the Army, but continues to find a way to be a leader of character for our nation.
Wow.
So that's one story. Another story is that of Lillian Fluke. Lillian is a member of the class of 80, the first class of women. And she's a retired Army officer. And 3 years after surviving breast cancer, Lillian cycled nearly 6,000 kilometers cross-country with Lance Armstrong and the Tour of Hope to raise awareness about cancer. She applied her physical prowess and entered the 2006 Masters World Bicycle Championships, where she smashed the hour record on the velodrome. And recently, she founded American War Memorials Overseas, a nonprofit group dedicated to preserving, promoting, and documenting America's overseas wartime legacy of non-government war memorials. And as you know, there's an American Battle Monuments Commission, which is the umbrella organization over all the cemeteries. But you know, throughout most European towns in Central Europe, there are small plaques and plazas and monuments that are part of our legacy, but there's no organization who maintains them. And so that's the mission of the organization Lil founded.
Wow.
And then I think another important story is that of Lissa Young. Lissa is an Army aviator qualified on 3 different aircraft. She was the commander of the High Altitude Rescue Unit in Alaska and responsible for the tactical warfighting response in the mountain and Arctic environments. And after nearly 16 years on active duty, selection for promotion to lieutenant colonel and assignment as permanent professor at West Point, she was asked to resign her commission because of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And she said her sexuality put her in violation of an Army policy. And while she had no real recourse for appeal other than to launch a campaign against the policy, she didn't want to do that. She had spent half her life dedicated to serving the Army, and she didn't want to spend the second half attacking it. And now Lissa chose to embrace her dismissal as an opportunity to begin again. And she's completing her doctorate at Harvard University, studying the history of science and how war has shaped the discipline of social psychology. So I think you have a broad range. The book opens with that of Kathy Gerstein, and Kathy's class of 80, Lil's classmate, who came to West Point seeking a strong engineering education. The last chapter of the book is that of her daughter, Sarah. Sarah is now a captain and serving in Afghanistan, her second combat tour.
Wow. And folks, that just goes to show you never know. Get out and talk to somebody. Talk to a friend, neighbor, uncle, aunt. You just never know what their experiences has been. And, you know, you brought up some great stories there and some women to be proud of for a fact. Now, Donna, before I forget, tell us how to get a hold of you, and also, do you have signed books available?
I do. The best way to get a hold of me is through my website, as you mentioned, Craig, porcelainonsteel.com. And there's a way to contact me on the website, and I would be honored to sign a copy for anybody. The book's available through all the major online retailers, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. All those links are on my website, and you know, again, I'd be happy to share that with anybody. So, and I encourage you, this is a great book for anybody seeking really stories of inspiration for your daughter, your sister, your best friend, and really most of all for yourself.
Now the next question is going to fall in. What is next for Donna McClear?
Well, I'm looking at doing a book on women having an impact in developing nations through various programs. So I'm exploring those concepts right now. The other thing is I'm continuing to highlight the stories of women in the military on my blog through a series called Honored Role.
Well, Donna, I thank you for coming on today. And as what else have I left out? What haven't we talked about? Because I could actually talk about this all day long. And I know neither one of us had the time for it. But what have I left out that you want to get across?
I want to get across the importance of sharing role models with people. Role models renew our sense of optimism and increase our confidence in our own ability to succeed. I think they set examples for us and our daughters and our sons, and we can draw strength from those who come before us. And also, you know, the importance of education and leadership and decision-making and personal responsibility. Education is something nobody can take away from you, regardless of whatever situation you find yourself in. So I think those are all pretty critical messages here. And for anybody out there who's got a dream, understand what your limits are and then completely ignore them.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much again for coming on. And folks, the book again is Porcelain on Steel, Women of West Point's Long Gray Line. And it's by Donna McAller. And Donna, thank you again for coming on. And we hope to hear more from you in the near future. I was wondering if you'd ever consider doing a book on the great military leaders in history.
The great, just of military leaders in general?
No, the great women military leaders.
Well, yes, definitely. And I mean, it's certainly one I'm considering because now we, you know, now have women in the senior most ranks of the military. So I think the challenge has been the time frame for those women to get there. But yes, that is definitely one I'm certainly considering right now and will likely pursue.
Fantastic. And I want to thank Ms. Donna again for coming on to our history project and sharing with us her book, Porcelain on Steel. And you can find her and the book at porcelainonsteel.com. That's P-O-R-C-E-L-A-I-N onsteel.com. And the book again is Porcelain on Steel, The Women of West Point's Long Gray Line. Well, folks, that about wraps up another episode of our history project. We appreciate you listening. Tune in every week for a story of our America. And for our history project, this is Craig Anderson. Have a good one.